your promise all over the place. Promise to love me, but what do I see? Just you coming and spilling juice over me. Odds and ends, odds and ends. Lost time is not found again. Ah, you take your file and you bend my head. I never can remember anything that you said. You promised to love me, but what do I know? You're always spilling juice on me like you got some place to go. Odds and ends, odds and ends. Lost time is not found again. Saying and you know what I mean. From now on, you best get on someone else. While you're doing it, keep that juice to yourself. Odds and ends, odds and ends. Lost time is not found again.
That would be Bob Dylan and the Band, One Last Drum Burst from Richard Manuel. This is Eric Nelson sitting in for David Bean on New Squid in Town. And we have a special show. We always say a special show here in Radioland, but I really mean a special show today. It's going to be a rousing salute to Bob Dylan's basement tapes, but we have a very special, and I do mean that in all senses of the word, guest. Chuck Prophet, are you there? And I hear the sound of heavy breathing. Either that's an obscene phone caller or that's Chuck Prophet. Well, is there, or is it both, Chuck?
Yeah, I'm a heavy breather.
Yeah, I could hear that heavy breathing going on. Well, welcome. And I want to—I don't want to embarrass you, Chuck, but I have no shame here. And I did pull this from a reliable source. If you don't know Chuck Prophet, shame on you. But I want to give you a quick introduction. If the best parts of your classic British invasion, 50s country, 60s pop, and pure rock and roll records could be transformed into a person, they might look and sound a lot like Chuck Prophet. Prophet has the charisma of an arena star, and thanks to his catchy guitar riffs, powerful choruses, and seductively casual vocal style, it could trick you into thinking he's talking straight into your ear. Are you appropriately embarrassed with that fulsome comment?
Should I be? I don't know.
No, I think, no, it's... Look, I'm a huge fan of your music, and the reason I'm so thrilled and privileged and honored and all that stuff to have you on is musicians know musicians, and I counted on Wikipedia, and there's so many albums I might have gotten the count wrong, but at least 16 official Chuck Prophet records, all with your own songs. You know about every level of songwriting, performing, woodshedding, composing. So your thoughts on the basement tapes are infinitely more interesting than mine, because I'm a complete hodad when it comes to picking up an instrument. So if you don't mind, I just want to ask the big dumb question. What is it about the basement tapes that, you know, I won't say you're fixated with it, but you've covered that ground, and we're going to talk in a second about how you're going to cover that ground in Santa Cruz next weekend.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty hard not to romanticize the basement tapes. I mean, you know, at this point, we've heard Bob Dylan records that are produced. Some were made in Nashville. Some were made in Los Angeles. You know, some were made in the best New York studios. But to have this kind of glimpse into his process, when he's just hanging out with his friends making music, you know, there's something just inherently romantic about that, you know.
Well,
and I think that adds, that has to do a lot, has a lot to do with it. Also, you know, the songs aren't finished, so they're not arranged into the ground, so there's a way into them.
And the performances too, you know, they're ragged but right. And you really hear the sound of musicians playing for themselves, playing for the art, not playing for any possible chance of commercial release. Though I'm convinced Bob Dylan knew he was working there for a reason. He some of the songs that came out of the Basement Tapes, hate to be a spoiler, folks, is Tears of Rage, I Shall Be Released, Wheels on Fire, The Mighty Quinn, songs that once Dylan got them out in the world immediately became big hits, and we're going to get to some of those hits today. But there's so much other great music in there, stuff that, you know, he clearly didn't intend to be distributed, but it gives it that charm and power.
Well, I think it's also pretty reactionary to what was going on in pop culture at the time. You know, when you look at Woodstock and you look at how bloated things were getting, and, you know, people were putting out records where one side was a long jam, and Dylan just reverted back to the stuff that was there for him in the beginning, which was folk music.
Well,
and apparently, you know, this Harry Smith anthology was a pretty great way in to all of this great American music, whether it's like, you know, hillbilly music or quote-unquote race records from the Mississippi Delta. That's the stuff that always ended up being great source material for Dylan. You know, Dylan, there's a lot of things he does. He doesn't necessarily use bridges in his song.
Well,
a bridge is a thing that you throw in there when you've fed them enough cookies, you know, the bridge goes somewhere, you take the cookie away. And then when it comes out of the bridge into another chorus, you give them the cookie back. So you've always got people on the edge of their seat. That's pop music, you know, whereas Dylan, you know, just kind of verse, chorus, and somehow, as Springsteen said, he manages to do it and not be boring.
Well, the interesting thing, speaking of chronology, the Basement Tapes were done, you know, spring, summer of 1967. Sgt. Pepper's comes out in June of 67, when you're talking about state of the rock art then. And apparently, legendarily, Dylan, someone put it on in Big Pink, maybe in the basement, and Dylan snapped, "Turn it off." Dylan was definitely tuning into his own wavelength and muse. And Harry Smith, for those want to know that, released a epic album set where he went and scoured all these obscure 78 records back in the 1950s. Smith was this incredible autodidact artist who released the anthology of folk music that probably, like they say with the Velvet Underground, they probably sold 30 copies, but every single one of the people who bought that became a Bob Dylan, a Jerry Garcia. It had this enormous seismic impact on music in the late 50s and 60s, and this is the period where Dylan really went back to the source and covered some. I don't think he cut any actual Harry Smith covers, but is Grill Marcus referred to it, the old weird America, which is this music typifies. Well, why don't we start, you know, a song that reflects everything. We're going to play a little mini set here, Chuck, that first off, it's a song you've heard, but this is Dylan's first and I think superior version. The lyrics in this first version cut any of the previous versions. And then we're going to just kind of ping pong around the Basement Tapes, the what Dylan did, and then some of the other stuff that was being done from it to get a grounding. How does that sound?
I can't.
And by the way,
I object to that.
I do want to say right now that Chuck is here for an ulterior reason. He and a band of merry music makers are coming to Moe's Alley next Saturday the 25th. Not this Saturday, next Saturday the 25th. We want to give you plenty of time to get your tickets starting at 8:30. Doors open at 8. But it's can you give me a little all Basement Tapes or Basement Tapes infused music, or you guys really don't know what the set list is yet, or all three?
Well, there's a lot of Basement Tapes stuff out there, aside from the double album, which I pretty much work out of. I mean, we were talking earlier, and I mentioned a song. You said, well, which version? There's seven versions. And I said, I don't even know the best version out of the 18 versions of my own song. So, I mean, I worked out of that double album, but, of course, there's been a lot of reissues, and there's been a lot of bootleg series, you know, and of course the original Great White Wonder record, I suppose,
with a 14
but
songs.
The Basement Tapes is a band with Brian Rashap from the Mother Hips, Craig MacArthur, Alex Jordan, David Simon Baker, and Sean Nelson. These guys play with Phil Esch and Friends and Stu Allen, and they invited me to come play a song a while back, and I ended up going to rehearsal and just playing along with everything. So now I'm a member of the band. And that's what we do. We just play out of the book of the basement tapes, and we take it places, you know, as you do.
Oh, that's, well, again, this is, this call this the lecture, this entire two-hour special, and next Saturday, the 25th at 8 o'clock, will be the lab at Moe's Alley. So let's go now to, well, check out these lyrics. I would hope, my request is if you're going to do this song, please, Chuck, do it with these lyrics.
Now look here, dear soup, you best feed the cats. The cats need feeding, you're the one to do it. Get your hat, feed the cats, you ain't going nowhere. Oh, oh, ride me high, tomorrow's the day my bride's gonna come. Bunch of basement noise, you ain't no punching bag. I see you walking out there, and you're the one to do it. Pick up your nose, you canary, you ain't going nowhere. Ooh, ride me high, tomorrow's the day my bride's gonna come. Pick up that oilcloth, cram it in the corn. I don't care if your name is Michael, you're gonna need some boards. Get your lunch, you fawn bib. You ain't going nowhere. You best go better find a file. I seen you out there beating on your hammer. You ain't no head of lettuce. Feed that buzzard. Lay him on the rug. You ain't going nowhere. Oh, ride me high. Tomorrow's the day my bride's gonna come. Ooh, how we gonna set down in the keys of chair.
all his kings supplied with sleep. We'll climb that hill, no matter how steep, when we get up to it.
I'm in love with that sound, the great Alex Chilton in the Box Tops. And before that, the Byrds, You Ain't Going Nowhere, and Dylan's first draft of You Ain't Going Nowhere with temp lyrics, which I have to admit I love. This is Eric Nelson, and I'm here with Chuck Prophet, the great Chuck Prophet, who's coming to town next week to celebrate and illuminate the Basement Tapes, and is graciously sitting in with me for a little while to talk about the Basement Tapes, music, and whatever wherever else we go. That was a request from you, Chuck, the Chilton version, if I recall correctly. There's so many versions of that song, it's tough to pick one.
Yeah, I think that version's great.
Well, the funny thing is that this is perfect, because you mentioned the double album, and again, I'm going to assume people aren't as rabid Dylan fans as we are. In 1975, they finally released the Basement Tapes. They kind of remastered them, added some overdubs, threw on some band tracks that weren't there, but put it out with one of the great album covers of all time. Everybody, all the characters from the Basement Tape photographed down in a mythical basement. But the thing I loved, Chuck, at the time, and I still love now, the hit, you know, I Shall Be Released, the standard, the classic. Of course, that's not on the record. Of course, we wouldn't put that on the album, right? You know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who really put that record together. I think maybe it was Robbie Robertson.
Yeah, but he would have had, you know, you're probably right, but Dylan would have had something to do with it. But if Robbie put it together and left I Shall Be released, it then proves to me he learned from the master. You know, one of the things that if you want to get chronology, folks.
I mean, I think in probably in many ways, you know, in 1974, I mean, I imagine Bob Dylan was into whatever he was doing in 1974.
Right, and could care less about what he did in 1973 and vice versa. I would agree with you totally. I mean, constant change.
Well, I mean, it's just out of necessity. I mean,
yeah, and if you think about it...
And just the necessity would mean that, well, you know, I mean... Well, he's not a librarian, you know. not his job.
That's exactly right, but thank God.
To be a librarian and go back through the, well, this is out of order here, and this should have come out, and I don't know, you know.
Well, you know, I know for a fact.
It's hard to say.
He hasn't been to he was in Oklahoma and never bothered to cross the street to go to the brand new Bob Dylan Museum. And even after hours, dressed in a hoodie, he had just zero interest, which is why he's Bob Dylan. He's always moving forward and never looking back. But, you know, we do all the looking back for him, I would think. Well, thanks to Garth Hudson, who's rolling tape. One of the things that I'm going to run this idea by you, Chuck, one of the special qualities of the basement tapes is the sound of it. You know, I think a lot of artists have tried to recapture just the sound of the basement tapes, just the way it sounds, the acoustics of the thing, the lo-fi. It does sound like the Harry Smith recordings, you know, one microphone or two microphones or really crude stereo, but they sound unique. They don't sound like anything else, you know, and I wonder if do you think that's added to some of the mystery of the whole thing?
Absolutely. You know, if you hear a Howlin' Wolf record or whatever, you don't get the kind of separation that you get when you're listening to a... you know, contemporary pop record, you know, you don't... So I think that it works to their advantage that the music is all squished together the way it is, you know. I mean, and you're hearing the atmosphere of the room itself, and there's always something, you know, poking out, like Robbie, something's too loud, something's poking out, and that's that makes it exciting. I don't know, you know, I remember just on a personal level, I remember there was a guy here in San Francisco who was part of this. They had developed this microphone. It was like a human head, and they would record things with this. And when you put headphones on, I remember the guy calling me on the phone saying, "I want to record you acoustically with some musicians, because when you use this microphone and you listen to a playback with headphones, it's like you're in the room with the person, you know." And I thought about that, and I thought, well, I want it to sound better than that. You know? I mean, I want it to sound like, you know, like, you know, like, you know, I want it to sound like Taxman or something, you know. That's where my head was at. I wanted it to sound like an explosive rock and roll record. So I don't know, you know, what people respond to.
Well, the funny thing is, if you played a bass, and I'm not going there, trust me, but of course I may surprise you later. If you, the quality of this broadcast, the way you sound and your guitar is as close to the basement tapes, honestly, as I think I've ever heard outside of the basement tapes. The compression, we sound exactly sort of like that. Well, there's a case you're just tuning in. I'm here with Chuck Prophet, and it's a special on Bob Dylan's basement tapes, which is going to be celebrated next Sunday night at Moe's Alley with Chuck and his merry band of musicians. So this is a warm-up. It's the lecture, and the lab will be following. One thing that I remember an interview with Robbie where he said that Bob would kind of be upstairs working, and then he'd come downstairs and he'd want to do something, and they didn't know whether the song Dylan was doing had been written 100 years before or whether he just had written it upstairs. They honestly sometimes didn't know where the song was coming from, and he did all these really interesting Chestnut folk covers and songs that were half new, half old, you know, this sort of fusion. This, I always heard Dylan as like a cuisine art of music. Everything goes in and it kind of comes out in this unique way. And that is another quality, I think, that gives the power is this kind of – this is an invent – in some ways, Chuck, don't you think this is inventing Americana, what became Americana rock or Americana music? This is sort of ground zero for that. You don't really see this sort of blend of tradition and new music and electric guitars. You know, I'm hard-pressed to think of before that. Even folk rock did not go where the Basement Tapes went.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can listen to the Basement Tapes on one level and think you're listening to some Mother Goose rhymes or knock-knock jokes and the things that are collected in these books of folk music. They also collected – who were the people that went out and collected the folk songs?
Well, in the Alan Lomax.
Yeah, the Lomax. They not only collected folk songs, but they – collected knock-knock jokes, and they collected, like, schoolyard, jumping rope kind of chants, and all those things, you know. And that, and Dylan used all that stuff for source material. And I think it's fascinating to just kind of reappropriate this stuff with electric guitars. It's cool, you know. It could be 100 years ago, or it could be today. You know, it doesn't really matter. Million Dollar Bash could be, it could be this sort of Mother Goose rhymes, or it could be about Lenny Bruce and a bunch of socialites somewhere on a balcony in Manhattan in a penthouse. I believe it all.
It's all true.
It's all true. And whether it's true, it eventually will become true.
We'll play now a couple songs. This is some of the covers he was doing in the Basement, which is these aren't Dylan songs, but they're part and parcel of everything. So we'll go back now. Not quite sure. The recording dates are a little dubious on this one, but this is again a rarity. We'll be playing a couple. The hits, I think, we'll be playing by cover artists because that's how Dylan intended it. But these are some of the more obscure numbers. But this is, again, one of those songs squarely in the folk tradition, but completely uniquely Bob Dylan and the band circa 1967.
bye-bye. Your youth when you're old, or a friend when you're lonesome, or a love that's grown cold. The wealthiest person is a pauper at times, compared to the man with the satisfied mind. When life has ended and death is a doubt, my friends and my loved ones, I'll leave, there's no doubt. But there's one thing for certain, when it comes my time, I'll leave this old world.
I didn't notice that guitar part on. I've heard that song a fair amount. We had them. I swear, Chuck. Honestly, the sound, the tonal quality of you playing, and the sound of you coming, the way you were coming. We've recreated the basement tapes. We've finally done it. I would be Eric Nelson. I'm sitting in for David Bean on New Squid in Town. I'm here with the great Chuck Prophet, and we're romping through the basement tapes, the amazing music recorded by Bob Dylan and the band in 1967. A little chronology here. Bob puts out Blonde on Blonde, records it in March, finishes recording it in March of 66, goes over to England and has these amazing shows, the amazing electric shows in May, is, well, not taking great care of himself. Has, in the end of July, the infamous motorcycle accident. To this day, nobody knows how badly he was injured. Was he injured? Was this just an excuse to get off the road? No one knows. He just retreats, but doesn't really retreat. He has to make money, and one of the ways Bob Dylan makes money is publishing and writing songs that people record, and Dylan always has an eye to money. So I do think the basement tapes were inspired by Dylan wanting to get product out there and new songs that, say, The Byrds or Manfred Mann could turn into top 10 hits. So he records all this music, releases 14 of the songs, which then become bootlegged as the Great White Wonder, like the first real bootleg. Everybody, I'm friends with Richard Thompson, and he describes when they got that, you know, the publisher demo in England and immediately jumped all over it and covered. We may get to one of their covers later. But that's sort of the background of what we're doing. But there's so much more to the basement tapes than just the 14 songs that people recorded. And as we talked about, Chuck, it really does kind of invent a whole new – it connects so many dots in American music, don't you think? I mean, it's sort of like the junction box of a lot of tributaries, mixing metaphors here wildly. But you know where I'm going here? There's so many connections made in this music.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's rock and roll, and it's blues and country music and bluegrass and folk music, ultimately, really, music that can be played by folks with a few chords on an instrument that you could purchase in the Sears and Roebuck catalog, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, it's cool to hear Dylan play these covers. Was that Satisfied Mind? I couldn't.
Yeah, that was Satisfied Mind.
Yeah, yeah. I said, this sounds like the melody of Satisfied Mind, but I don't even, you know, it's, you know, something I learned recently with all this Beatles hoopla and the extended Let It Be film was that, you know, the Beatles, they didn't write any songs in Hamburg. Not a song. But they learned a lot of songs, and they probably learned, you know, the framework for what they eventually what eventually became their own songs. And I feel like everybody's got to learn songs and then unlearn the songs, or maybe keep the frame and insert your own life and feelings into the frame. And I just think what makes Dylan so great, or somebody like Lucinda Williams, is this ability to really internalize all these disparate influences and just transform them into their own personal expression, you know, and make it look pretty damn easy.
Well, the thing I was thinking,
which is, you know, I don't feel that way when I listen to Prague. You know, these guys aren't making it look easy. I think it's like what Bukowski says about an intellectual takes a simple thing and makes it complicated, but a poet takes a complicated thing and makes it simple.
That is perfect.
I don't even think that's the quote, but somebody can correct me.
Whatever. I'll say you came up with that. See, it's just like Bob Dylan. Yeah. You're taking from the folk tradition and making it new. Well, when I think of a song, you talked about learning his craft. The idea of Robbie Robertson sitting there marinating in this process with Bob, coming downstairs and bringing in lyrics. The song like The Weight, you know, that surreal Take a Load Off Fanny, that is such a basement tape song, you know. It's such a it sounds wholly of a, you know, that's something Dylan easily could have written. And who knows, I know he has half the publishing on it, so he probably might have contributed just a little bit to it. But you can see where that's going. And the music from Big Pink album, you know, who inspired who? Did the band drive Dylan into this direction? Did Dylan drive the band? I would say it's probably just a combination of great musical marination.
Bob blessed it. He made it cool. You know, that goes a long way.
And the cover, remember? It did the cover art for that. And that was the first time, I think, that was when Tears of Rage, I Shall Be Released, Wheels on Fire, those three songs came out on Big Pink. And people were like, holy, holy this. What I want to do now, Chuck, is, and I'll just play little scraps. Great thing about Dylan, you know the story of, Wagon Wheel? You know, that Dylan on the Pat Garrett soundtrack sessions dashed off a song called Rock Me Mama. It was just a song scrap that got bootlegged, and then somebody heard it and picked it up and wrote the song Wagon Wheel, which became this immense hit for Darius Rucker, a bunch of people. And there's song scraps. You picked one that I'll start off with, but what's interesting, these are scraps. They're fragments of songs that Bob was working on that just got recorded as fragments, but every one of them, if he just like hung on to them a little longer, could have become something. So I'm going to play some quick little song fragments here. So we'll start with, it's a request. What was one of your requests, Chuck?
Now when I call her by her name, you know, she don't come. She don't leave me down easy, yeah, but I don't.
Three-time loser, but I'm all right. Again, a great little song scrap. A good choice, Chuck. You know.
Well, I only mentioned that because I saw that as one of the titles that the Basement Tapes band wants to play, and I thought, well, maybe.
But it's not finished, though. What are you going to do?
Maybe you can dig it up.
What are you going to do for the rest of the song? You have to
play some solos. There's enough there. There's a couple verses and a chorus.
Now here's another. Here's another little song scrap. This is just 43 seconds. Yeah, that could be done. My instinct is a fair amount of, marijuana was wafting through the rafters of Big Pink, but maybe I'm wrong there. But that's it. That was 43 seconds. That's all
this stuff doesn't really surprise me. Is it any wonder that kids want their parents to honk the horn in the tunnel, you know? Because you do it because it's fun, and if you like what you hear coming back at you, then maybe you'll keep going, you know? And that's kind of, at a certain point, everything is improvised, you know? At a certain point, you got to shout at the walls and try to figure out what sounds good, or just show up or wiggle your fingers. And, you know, so, I mean, it's not that, I don't know that anybody is, I think people want to believe that the stork brings people songs and they're, you know, they're complete, or they come to people in a dream. That's just never been my experience.
What
does I'm not doing it right.
But it, you know, okay, you're a serious accomplished songwriter. Is it a combination of sit down and, you know, I know Richard Thompson's MO is he literally like sits down and it's time to work. He tries to work every day, whether the inspiration's there or not. And, you know, he's not one of those lightning strike muse guys, though I guess ideas come his way. Do you have any MO for working, or other than trust your instincts?
Well, I mean, I might have a scrap of paper that has a title, but I'm kind of suspicious of songs that are written backwards from the titles. So, you know, I don't trust that so much. I mean, I sometimes have to drag somebody into the room with me to wrestle the idea to the ground. I might just play some chords and I can start to hear a melody. If the melody's good, maybe it'll stick with me. You know, I have lots of cassettes. Well, I used to have cassettes, or I have lots of phone memos of things that I never returned to. I don't know any one way to do it, but I think when I was in this group, Green on Red, and they would ask us what came first, the words or the melody, we always said, oh, the advance. You know?
The check.
I mean, which sounds kind of cynical, but I mean, I do get excited about going into the studio, and I look, and I, you know, I impose these deadlines on myself so that I can have a batch of songs that I consider Chuck go to the head of the class kind of songs, you know. So I can't really say I have any one way of writing songs.
Didn't you go to Nashville for a while, like literally relocate to Nashville and sort of become a part of, if not that machinery, but kind of change your MO and work in a different environment? How was that, and what did you, you know, what's your perception of that, the quote, country music songwriter scene?
It was fantastic. It was great. I still go there sometimes. For me, it was great because I'd just gotten clean. I didn't have a record deal. I didn't really have a band. I really didn't have any prospects. And I had a publisher that sent me to Nashville and hooked me up with some, you know, co-writing dates. And although I didn't, you know, have an instant connection with everybody I wrote with, I did make some friends in those early days, like Angelo Petraglia and Kim Ritchie, and I'd written with Dan Penn before, and you know, these are went on to be relationships I've had for a long time, And I got some thoughts. I got some songs cut, and I got a check in the mail, and it changed the way I write. It made me better. So I'm not cranky about Music Row or any of those things. I think Nashville's a great place because it was a place where the tradition of the songwriters do the writing and the pickers do the picking and the producers do the, you know, it was still very much alive and well. Of course, this was in the late 90s when the Garth Brooks years, when there was so much money sloshing around. I think it was a very unique time. But, I learned was that a lot of the things that I, a lot of the stuff that I knew that was essentially self-taught just from being in bands, you know, like when you come up in rock bands with your friends and you don't have any musical education, you're dealing strictly in what we call GBUs, and that's garage band units, you know. So somebody might say, oh, this goes four times, and then you do the other part four times, and then we go back to the first part and do it eight times, and those are garage band units. So I found that all the things that I'd learned from being in bands actually helped me in Nashville because it enabled me to put things together. Oh, somebody's doing that. Well, this other part will connect, and then maybe we could go here for a bridge. And I kind of had a toolbox that I wasn't really aware of, and it helped me, you know. It was great. I learned a lot.
And
there's an expression they use in Nashville, if you're riding with somebody and you do something, let's say something Dylan-esque, they'll say, yeah, that's great, you know, that's writerly. And writerly is that's a little bit of shade thrown your way, you know.
Oh, self-conscious, it's like, you're wearing the craft on your sleeve.
Yeah, what you want is you want a song that sounds like the way people talk.
Well, I'm a big fan of Brandi Clark. I've been following her for years and years, and I'm proud to say I paid good money to see Shucked on Broadway, and I'm really happy with her. But her background, you know, is totally in that Shane McNally and her, and, you know, she's really embedded in that thing, and it hasn't hurt her art or songs at all, and that she does have that kind of colloquial, non-writerly, but you know it's written, you know, it's so well-crafted. So, again, Bob, though, is on that whole other level, though. I don't know what a foreign bib was in that You Ain't Going Nowhere, or some of the things he was talking about.
Well, you know, he helps. It helps to listen to the Basement Tapes the same reason I listen to Alan Vega, you know, when I'm writing an album, because I need to remind myself to think small.
Let's play.
And that a song doesn't have to be a huge idea.
Well, let's play. Let's just go to why don't we go to Gene Clark? We're talking about covers. This isn't the version that made this song famous, but we have a Birds thing going on. This is a nice version of this particular song. Again, a Basement Tape song. You're listening to New Squid in Town. I'm sitting in for David Bean, and I would be Eric Nelson. I'm here with the great Chuck Prophet. And an announcement, I got a text from Chuck while the song music was playing. He is magnanimously going to make four, F-O-U-R, tickets available for the show on the 25th, Thanksgiving weekend, Saturday the 25th at Moe's Alley. And in the next hour, I will give you some ideas on how you might cop those tickets. We'll figure out. This is a breaking news, so I've got to figure out the mechanics of mass ticket giveaways. But while I'm thinking about it, let's go now to Gene Clark and a cover of one of the more illustrious of the Basement Tape songs.
Carried you in our arms on Independence Day, and now you throw us all aside and put us on our way. Oh, what daughter beneath the sun treat her father so.
tears of rage, tears of grief. Why am I always the one who must be the thief? Come to me now, you know we're so alone, and life is brief. Pointed out the way to go and scratched your name in sand. Though you thought it was nothing more than a place for you to stand, I want you to know that while we watched you discovered there was no one true, and I myself remember now I thought it was a childish thing to do. Tears of rage, tears of grief. Why I'm always the one who must be the thief. Come to me now, you know we're so alone, and life is brief. It all seems so very painless when you went out to all that false instruction that we never could believe. And now the heart is filled with gold as if it was a purse. But oh, what kind of love is this that goes from bad to worse? Tears of rage, tears of grief. I'm always the one who must be the thief. Come to me now, you know we're so alone, and life is brief. Nothing was delivered, and I tell this truth to you. Simply because it's true. Now I hope you won't object to giving, getting back all of what you owe. The fewer words you have to waste on this, the sooner you go. Nothing is better, nothing is better. Take care of yourself, give plenty of rest. Nothing was delivered, say I sympathize with what your fate is going to be. Yes,
for telling all those lies. Now you must provide some answers for what you sold that's not been received. And the sooner you come up with them, sooner you can leave. Nothing is better. Nothing is better. Take care of yourself and take rest. Now you know nothing was delivered. Just what you had in mind when you made everybody pay. No, nothing was delivered. Yes, and someone must explain. It takes to do this, then that's as long as you remain.
This is KSQD, Santa Cruz, 90.7 FM, KSQT, Prunedale, 89.7 and 89.5 FM, and KSQD.org.
KSQD thanks Good Times for supporting this program. Good Times provides local news and entertainment information every Wednesday. Available online at goodtimes.sc and in print at locations throughout Santa Cruz County. Thank you, Good Times, for supporting community radio, K-Squid.
And you're listening to New Squid in Town with Eric Nelson, sitting in for David Bean, who's in New Orleans, partying hardy down there. And I'm with the great Chuck Prophet, who's for the last hour. And for the next hour, we're unpacking some of the wondrous music that lies in the basement tapes. When I hear that song, Nothing Was Delivered, by Bob, I definitely can sense that that might just have been to Albert Grossman. I know he was breaking up with his manager at the time. It's pretty explicit, and everyone says, "Dear Land." Yeah, you know, nothing was delivered. You owe. Someone's going to have to make up for this. Dylan was going through a lot of business turmoil there. He was being courted by MGM Records. His Columbia contract was up. You know, Dylan always had eye on business.
You could say the song is about Donald Trump, you know, you could say.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's about, I wouldn't really venture to guess what, but if you make a promise and you don't deliver it, then that's, nothing was delivered. It makes you a liar. It's a political song.
Yeah, it's, well, great. It could be anything. And I probably, Dylan, if you ask him the day after he wrote it, he wouldn't have remembered what it was about, right?
So, yeah, I do like that cool, you know, that Fats Domino kind of, you know. Super cool.
That's Dylan on piano, or is that Richard Manuel? I wonder.
I couldn't guess.
Yeah, because Dylan is a very underrated piano player. I don't know if you had a chance to see any of the. Did you see any of the Rough and Rowdy Way shows?
I haven't seen any of the Rough and Rowdy shows because in the early days it was still. I feel like it was still in the days of COVID, but he's still out there. So I hope to catch one.
Well, the reason I bring it up is he's doing great. He's really on the tinkling the ivories. He, you know, I think he has arthritis now, and it's tougher for him to play guitar. But he's made up for it with really good piano playing. And every night he's as ever. I saw two shows within I saw him in Oakland, and I saw him about a month, 6 weeks later in Santa Cruz. And needless to say, even though he was doing pretty much the same set list, all the arrangements were different. I mean, profoundly different arrangements, which, you know, you got to love Bob Dylan, of course, because the music is always, always evolving. Which is
I think they should have played Nothing Was Delivered at I don't know. Maybe I started this rumor. I heard they played that at Fidel Castro's funeral. I don't know.
Huh. I did not know that. All right. Well, anyway, we're getting into things here. It's tough to say, like, favorite versions. You wanted you sent me a couple of, again, not requests, but a version of Clothesline Socket. Can you set this up?
Well, I think this is the Basement Tapes band, who I introduced before, live in Novato or Sebastopol on that side of the bridge. It's hot off the press, mixed by David Simon Baker. And I thought maybe it might give people an idea about what we sound like and what they can expect to hear at Moe's. In fact, while we're here, maybe we should try to give away some tickets.
That is, I was just, great minds think alike. I was just thinking about that, and I figured out a way to do this. You're generously letting us have four tickets, which would, I think, break down to two pairs. And so what I'm thinking, because I'm all by my lonesome here, with the exception of my dog, who I'm trying to keep under control from rampaging in the studio. I think the way to do it would be during this next song. If you email me, don't call, but email me, and I'll give you my email, and I'm just going to look and see whose email hits my email box first, right? Great way of doing it. And then I will get back in touch with you for all the deets, because Chuck's going to need to add your name to the list as you plus your good friend, Mr. Plus One, or Mrs. Plus One. So while this next song is playing, Clothesline Saga, you can get me at Eric, E-R-I-K, with a K, at ksqd.org, ksqd.org. And what I'm going to do when the show's over is I'm going to look at my emails, and whatever email I get first, there'll be two pairs of two. So I will answer the first two emails I get, each get two. If you only want one ticket, we'll figure that out later. But anyway, this is what you can hear at Moe's Alley, and the lucky people who are by their computers and nimble will be able to get, courtesy of Chuck Prophet, a ticket to Moe's Alley next Sunday, the 25th. Thanksgiving weekend.
Said very much, just a couple wild shirts and a couple pairs of pants that nobody really wanted to touch. Mama come in and picked up a book. Papa asked her what it was. Somebody else said, what do you care? Mama said, I don't know, just because. Then we all went back to picking up the clothes, hanging them on the line. It was January the 30th. Everybody was feeling fine. Very next day, everybody got up, seeing if the clothes were dry. Hound dog howls and bullfrog barking, and Mama, of course, she said hi. Well, have you heard? said with a grin, the vice president's gone mad.
Where?
Downtown.
Where?
Last night. Gee, that's too bad. Well, there ain't much we can do about it now, said the neighbor. I guess it's just something we'll have to learn to forget. Gee, I guess so, said Ma. And then she asked me if the clothes were wet. I reached up, I touched my shirt. The neighbor said, are those clothes yours? I said, some of them, not all of them. He said, do you always help out with the chores? I said, sometimes, not all the time. And then my neighbor, he blew his nose. Just about then, Papa yelled from inside. He said, get back in the house, and Mama wants you to bring them clothes. Just do what I'm told. I went back inside and Mama met me there, and then she shut all the doors.
Clothesline Saga. That is a wonderful piece of music. And I know you're going to, Chuck, have a bone to pick with me on this, but on the basement tapes reel for that song, okay, like written down in someone's handwriting at the time, the title of that song was Answer to Ode, as in Ode to Billy, off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
It's, Pass the Biscuits, Please.
Yeah, Pass the Biscuits. But Ode to Billy, I can't remember that title. I'm truly losing it. But basically that was an answer song that they kind of dashed off, or at least that's how they said it. But, of course, now it has universal meaning when you talk about the vice president going mad, et cetera. Well, Augie Dent, you are going to see the music live. You're going to get to see perhaps that song next Saturday, the 25th, at Moe's Alley, and I'll give away two more with that cryptic thing. So I'm checking my email, but that was a really spirited version. I've heard the Roches version. It's not too very few people cover have the stamina to cover that song. So I applaud you.
Oh, well, that's definitely my cup of meat right there.
Definitely. So we talked about influences. I'm going to play a couple songs now. There's the only country artist I may love more than Hank Williams is Luke the Drifter. And I know, Chuck, you know who Luke the Drifter is, but for the sake of for our audience, Luke Drifter was the norm and duplume of Hank Williams, the great Hank Williams, who issued a series, one could say maudlin spoken word tracks, but I think they're wonderful. And I think Ramblin' Man might have been by Luke the Drifter. I don't think Hank put it out under his name. But Bob Dylan, being the musical sponge that he is, covered that song in the basement tapes. And then Bob did kind of his own version of Luke the Drifter, channeling that same vibe. So I'm going to play a two-pack of Bob doing Luke the Drifter, a.k.a. Hank Williams, and then Bob doing his own version of it. And Chuck, you'll recognize it when you hear it, but this has some really beautiful, beautiful Robbie Robertson, the second track in particular has some beautiful Robbie Robertson song. But, we were talking about influences and what they were listening to. And that's the thing, just before we get into that, and being a card-carrying, gifted musician, singer, songwriter, big ears, big listening ears, isn't that sort of a prerequisite to being a good musician? I mean, just being able to listen, absorb, and channel?
Well, I found that the people that I like playing with the most, have done a lot of listening and are sensitive, yeah, and, can follow you.
And
because So there has to be some sort of entry point.
And then I obviously just listening to, you know, oh, you like so-and-so, you'd like so-and-so. I guess it's a way of, this is my alternate universe. If I had any musical ability whatsoever, and I'm not just have zero musical ability as a deficit with me, I would imagine that you musician's secret code is, you know, talking about the music you love is a great way of figuring out what you can do together, or just as a communication, a way of communication with one another.
Well, yeah, I mean, speaking of the Beatles, it was interesting to see them in action. They didn't have much language, you know, and sometimes they might reference other songs of their own when they tried to describe what they were trying to do. So, yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that the other day. I was on Daryl Hall from Hall & Oates. I was on his show called Live at Daryl's House. And they let me bring like three songs to the party, and one of them was an Alan Toussaint song. And I watched Daryl learn it. I mean, they put a lyric sheet in front of him, and the way he learned it was that he said, "Oh, you know, for the bridge, he goes, oh, that's when it goes into that kind of Earth, Wind, and Fire thing." So he had his own shorthand for learning the song, which I found fascinating. You know, So, yeah, I guess it really doesn't stop.
Yeah, it never does. All right, well, let's go to Bob channeling Luke the Drifter, and then Bob going, Lord, you know, this is maybe a proto-Christian song of Bob. I don't know where he went from this, but I remember when this thing kind of emerged, you know, whenever it did emerge, this, I won't say it shocked people, but people were like, what? What? Who? Where?
Why don't you put it up in D? A neighbor with passing.
A tongue can accuse or carry bad news. The seeds of distrust it will sow. So unless you have made no mistakes in your life, be careful. Passing my garden one time, she smiled and I knew right away that it was gossip, not flowers, that she had on her mind. And this is what I heard my neighbor say: that bad girl down the street, she should be run from my midst. She drinks and she talks quite a lot. She knows not to speak to my child or to me. My neighbor then smiled, and I thought, a tongue can accuse and carry bad news. Seek of destruction for soul. So unless you have made no mistakes in your life, be careful of stone. By the screaming of brakes and a sound that made my blood chill. For my neighbor's one child had been pulled from the path and saved by a girl lying still. A child was unhurt, my neighbor cried out, oh, who is that brave girl so sweet? I covered the crushed, broken body and said, that bad girl down the street. A tongue can accuse and carry bad news. The seed of distrust in your soul. So unless you have made no mistakes in your life, be careful.
Songs that you throw. wrong, and I just try to leave, and I hope it ain't high, but it's free. That I know in my head that we're all so misled, and it's that old sign on the cross. That where is me? Now when I was just a ball in my eyes, I saw what I wanted to be. All for the sake of that I should see. But I was lost on the anymore, because I can tell you one time, if I don't see you again, then the thing is that that sign on the cross is the thing you might need the most. Where's the if that sight on the cross, if it begins to worry you, well, that's all right. You just sing this song, and all your troubles pass right on through.
Sign on the Cross, a more obscure track from the Basement Tapes. What do you think about, now, I've always just loved that song. It's just it's like a basement rave-up, Chuck Prophet, who's joining me for this special 2 hours. Does that song move you like it moves me?
Well, I wouldn't call it a rave-up.
Well, the end, though, he's kind of, he's preaching.
I think that set was pretty dreary, actually. We're going to need some peaks and valleys to keep...
Keep
people paying attention here.
Well,
engaged.
Well, come on now. You're second guessing my thematic choices here. I have a care, sir. Well, you okay? I'll raise you then. You brought up Million Dollar Bash. So how about that? Is that a beat
that
enough for you?
Fantastic.
Let's go to Million Dollar
Bash.
Well,
I just want, you know, there's Apple Suckling Tree. There's all kinds of
upbeat stuff.
Songs that. You know, are not dreary.
Not dreary. Okay. Well, I'm
we had back to back. You know,
back to, well, I was trying to make a thematic point here. It's the Stones that you
absolutely.
Throw, Luke the
it's
Drifter.
Not lost on me.
Yeah, I understand. And well, that's one of us at least. All right. Well, you asked for Million Dollar Bash. We brought up Richard Thompson, Fairport Convention, the detonation of the Basement Tapes upon their music. This is one of my favorite versions. In fact, this was the first version of that song I ever heard.
Bash, and it's ooh, baby, ooh. by, and then push and then crash. But everybody's going to make it to that $1 million bash. Yeah.
Back on home to be mashed, but then I made it right on to that $1 million bank.
So is that rocky enough for you, Mr. Critically Acclaimed Musician? Huh? Huh? Huh?
I thought that was great.
Yeah, that was your request, so it's not a coincidence that I'd never heard that version. It's not, again, not a song that people are usually going to cover. Manfred Mann, they really did go deep into the Basement Tapes. They did Get Your Rocks Off, too, that. I mean, they were definitely looking into the nooks and crevices of that music. So where are we now? I'm just looking at my massive playlist. Well, I can tell you one thing while we gather our breath, that there's more to KSQD than just Chuck Prophet, Eric Nelson dissecting the Basement Tapes as I sit in for David Bean. I got that all in. There's also great talk, and today at 5 o'clock, Talk of the Bay. Rachel Goodman's going to speak with neuropsychiatrist Anthony Feinstein about his new book, Moral Courage, in which Anthony interviewed investigative journalists who risk their freedom and their lives to report on the front lines. What drives them, along with aid workers and other dedicated people, to persist in that mission, and a very harrowing mission right now in Gaza? And not only that, Jessica Carew-Kraft is the author of Why We Need to Be Wild, and she's going to discuss her quest to live simply off the land in a life close to nature, an optimal thing for all of us. So listen to that double punch of fascinating and inspiring stories on Talk of the Bay, 5 o'clock today on this fine, fine radio station, KSQD. So where are we? One thing I want to maybe get to, maybe at the end of the show, this is called teasing. You're aware of the Budokan reissue, Chuck? It actually just hit the streets, I think, today, or it's coming out tomorrow, but I got an advance copy.
You know, well, I really like that version of I Want You that was on live at Budokan. The flute, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's...
That surfaced recently, and that was a treat. Well, that's one of my kind of go-to...
Really, arrangements.
Songs.
Well, that was the thing is, and again, this is raises the bigger question about Bob Dylan, is that was an album, and to bring everyone up to speed, that was released... A Japanese-only album released in 1978 was the first couple of shows from what turned out to be a 120-night massive tour where detractors said Dylan went Vegas. I caught him in Oakland on that tour. I remember seeing it, you know, way in the back. But I didn't have any problems with it, and the shows got better and better. But they put out this record.
What year did you say?
78. It was this would have been the shows in question were February 28th and March 1st. Of 78. So this was, he was.
Yeah, I could see, you know, Bob Dylan picking up a Rolling Stone magazine and with Kiss on the cover or something and thinking, like, what's in here? I'm out.
Well, what I
had a good run. I'm out. and probably, you know, the Neil Diamond thing probably wasn't that much of a stretch from.
Well, Jerry Weintraub was the producer of the tour, and definitely Dylan didn't need a lot of coaxing to go, quote, commercial. You know, it's funny thing is, Dylan can never win. You know, a lot of people are going to shows and saying, oh, we don't hear the hits. He's not playing them like he used to. So at a time where he really reaches out.
Well, I think
out,
by now people would have to have been. Dug themselves a pretty deep hole.
To expect to hear
It Ain't Me, Babe the way it was in 1960.
Au contraire. Yeah. Honestly, you should see there's still reviews coming out where people are and there's still walkouts in the shows. People are actually thinking they're, yeah. You know, I mean, it's astonishing to me that
I don't know. You know, he's in his Cubist era. Things change.
Absolutely. Well,
I mean, I guess if you just came in off the street and you didn't know. If you hadn't checked in with him somewhere along the way in the last, 40 years, then...
Or 40 years,
maybe, it might just be like hieroglyphics to you, like, you know, unrecognizable. But, you know, for people that check in with him, you know, he's never disappoints.
Absolutely. Well, we've talked about it, and so I do have, this is a song you probably haven't heard, but it's a Basement Tape
song. It's interesting that somebody that has disappointed so many people is probably the most bootlegged artist in the history of recorded music.
Well,
so for a guy that people are walking out on What explains the fact that nobody can get enough?
Well, I'm showing my age because I saw Dylan, I saw this tour in 78, and then I was at the infamous Warfield 1979, the all Jesus, New Jesus song tour. And I remember vividly standing in the audience. I probably went to three or four nights there, and standing with, wait for it, Bill Graham, as the people, audiences were booing and reacting this and shaking my head with Graham and I both. And Graham was the kind of guy you could just kind of walk up to and say, what do you think, Bill? And he talked to you. We were both bemused because the music was incredible. And the idea that Dylan in 1979 could still piss people off that much, we found it amazing. Like, he still had the gift of annoying people strongly, which, you know, you got to admire anyone who can do that, especially at that point when he was, you know, aggressively maybe deconstructing his legend, you know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there are people that will tell you that all stories go back to the Bible, and he probably thought, man, this is almost as good as that Harry Smith box set.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, and you've heard the music.
There's a lot in here.
And the music he was playing was Jim Keltner on drums. I mean, the band was fantastic. Dylan absolutely gave it 110% every single show of that tour. It just was completely confounding to everybody. But, you know, I just remember wishing that Mark Knopfler was there because I really liked his guitar work. But I'm going now way down the Dylan rabbit hole.
Well, Fred Tackett's not a slouch.
Not at all. No, everyone. Tackett was amazing. It was Tim Drummond, I think, on bass. But, you know, then they came back the next year, and that's where Graham said, look, you've got to do something. You know, God loves your old songs, too.
Does Bill Graham really take credit for that?
He says that he had a stern talking to on the next time in 80, saying you got to throw somebody a bone, allegedly. Yeah, I mean, Graham, I'm a Graham fan. I worked with a guy, and I observed him under a lot of circumstances. And, you know, he was the kind of guy you could go up to as a crazy fan at the Warfield and have a nice in-depth conversation about Bob Dylan, and he would connect with you. You know what I'm saying? So there's that. And not only that, he talked to me, which is even more shocking, Chuck. Well, I talked about Budokan, so this you haven't heard yet, and this is a basement tape song. We have played it before, but what the hell? The arrangement is different. This is literally just out. I just got it today. I think it officially hits the streets tomorrow. But this is Bob, March 1st, 1978, sang a song, a classic from the basement tapes.
Say everything can be replaced, and every distance is not near. So I remember every face I've ever made who put me here. I see my light come shining from the west down to the east. Any day now, any day now. I shall be down here in this lonely crowd is a man who swears he's not to blame. All day long I hear him crying out so loud, crying out that he's been free. I see my light come shining down to the east. Any day now, any day now.
Every man needs protection. They tell me every man must fall. But I swear I see my reflection. Somewhere so high above this wall. I see my light and shining from the west down to the east. Any day now, oh, any day now. I shall be
restrained Japanese audience there for Bob Dylan. So, Chuck, what do you think? That's
it's entertaining. Probably,
yeah, isn't that good? And Steve
Douglas. It's entertaining. I love it.
And Steve Douglas on sax, Phil Spector's main man there. I think that on that tour there was a bit of chasing after Bruce Springsteen, but he was aware of Bruce Springsteen out there. That was the Springsteen's Darkness at the Edge of Town tour. The Stones were out. A lot of people were out on the road there, so Bob may have just wanted to keep current with what was happening musically, just simple as that, and wanted a big band out with him. Who can blame him, right?
Yeah, those big arrangements are cool.
Yeah. So that's from the new Bob Dylan at Budokan album. I'm Eric Nelson. I'm with Chuck Prophet. This is the waning moments of New Squid in Town, and we're gathered here for a reason, not just to celebrate the basement tapes, but to celebrate an upcoming show that Chuck and his cohorts are going to be playing at Moe's Alley November 25th. That would be Saturday. And we have two tickets left. Chuck has let loose two tickets to that.
I can't take personal credit for
well, that, I'm going to give you credit for it. I'm going to give you the blame. You're liable now. Ahead. If anyone has any issues, that they're going to.
I facilitated it.
You facilitated it, but you've made it possible. And during the next song we play, which I don't quite know what that's going to be, one last chance. And if you email me at eric@ksqd.org, Eric with a K at ksqd.org. Whoever emails me first will get two tickets, and I will make arrangements thusly. So, fortunately, if you're driving, that's probably not going to be a possibility. But if you're home and doofing around the internet or on your computer, you have a perfect opportunity to do that. One of my favorite. I'm trying to keep it upbeat now. I'm very conscious now, Chuck.
Okay.
Now you've gotten in my.
Last song was a ballad. It was a power ballad.
I know, but you know, you got me looking over my shoulder now. So you've harshed my mellow man. So one of my favorite covers of a basement tape song is actually Dylan and the Band, but not an unusual one. When the Great Rock of Ages album, Chuck, the double album by the Band So they did an encore on New Year's. In fact, in the original album, there's a little tiny black and white picture that everybody was baffled because it clearly showed Bob Dylan. But before the internet, nobody really knew what was going on. But Dylan showed up on New Year's Eve and played four songs with the Band, which is a big deal. You know, Bob wasn't playing in the 1971, 72, 73. There were almost no appearances by Bob Dylan that period of time. But this is, I think, the first song they did at the Academy of Music. So this was recorded the night of one of the nights of the Great Rock of Ages album. And speaking of Robbie Robertson, what's the phrase you musicians use? He wails on this particular song.
Yeah.
I saw the letter caught a fire on the floor.
And what do I know, Chuck? That was rehearsed like never, right? Dylan probably got on stage and called an audible, and they went right into it.
Yeah. Well, the horns knew what they were doing.
Well, yeah. Well, Alan Toussaint.
They generally need to know. They generally need to have a plan.
Robbie Robertson, ladies and gentlemen. Any words on Robbie? You know, I did a show right the day afterwards and tried to, you know, say what you could about Robbie Robertson, but a great musician and a great loss.
Absolutely.
Great guitar player. Well, believe it or not, Franco Piccarella, you are now the proud owner of two tickets to see Chuck
Piccarella.
Piccarella.
In my office.
Oh, are you serious? This is a ringer here?
I don't know.
I doubt that. If that is, then, well, he's a very plucky ringer if he's listening to this radio show. This would be New Squid in Town. I would be Eric Nelson. And I want to say for the last time, but it's important you all know this, that next Saturday the 25th at Moe's Alley, if you like this music, the only way that you're going to improve on the originals is to see Chuck and his band and fellow musicians jam it out at Moe's Alley. Basement tapes, infused music, basement tape covers, and absolutely the spirit of things. It's a must-see on a Thanksgiving, so you can bloat yourself out on turkey. I have one day to recover and then head over to Moe's Alley. Does that sound like a plan? I think it sounds like a plan. Well, Chuck, thank you so much for sitting in with me and allowing me to go all Luke the Drifter on you.
Well, it's fun to hang out, and of course these songs are timeless and so great. You know, I know there's been a lot of scholarly stuff written about the basement tapes and a lot of MFA gibberish thrown on the pile, but it's every time I hear these songs, I hear something different. So thanks.
And I'm going to go out. I won't say it's a bummer, but I'm going to go out.
Sandy Denny, I never got it. I mean, when Sandy Denny came in on that Million Dollar Bash, I had to stand up.
Oh man, the great Sandy Denny, absolutely. You know, a great. What can you say about the great Sandy? I got to see her actually 1974 at the Berklee Community Theater, and it was the hall was so empty. They said, "Hey, everybody, come on down and sit up front." And this was Fairport Convention. I was part delighted to sit closer and part like,
wow,
"Are you kidding me? Are you
bragging rights?
Yeah, are you kidding
Fantastic.
Me? Yeah, no, I saw Sandy. I was an early adopter. Why don't we go out? We've talked about, played enough Bob here. I'm a fan of Richard Thompson's. You're a fan of Richard Thompson's. We just brought up Sandy Denny. And I have just about 3 minutes left in this broadcast. So I'm going to go out on a Basement Tapes cover, acoustic cover by the great Richard Thompson. Thank you again, Chuck, so much for sitting in for the last 2 hours. It's been a sincere sensation.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for giving our show some attention. And I'll see you around campus, Eric.
Take care.
If your memory serves you well, we've been going to meet again anyway. So I'm going to unpack all my things and send before it gets too late. No matter what, we'll come to you with another tale to tell. But you know that we shall meet again if your memory serves you well. This wheel's on fire, rolling down the road. Just notify my next of kin, this wheel shall explode. If your memory serves you well, I was gonna confiscate your lace and wrap it up in a sailor's knot and hide it in your case. If I knew for sure that it was yours, it was oh so hard to tell. But you knew that we would meet again if your memory serves you well. This wheel's on fire, rolling down the road. Just notify my next of kin, this wheel shall explode. if your memory has served you well. Remember, you're the one that called on me to call on them to get you your favors done. And after every plan had failed and there was nothing more to tell, you knew that we would meet again if your memory serves you well. This wheel's on fire, rolling down the road. Just notify my next of kin, this wheel shall explode.